Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. It's the evening of the second day, Beis BeElul, Parashas Shoftim, the evening of the first day, Sunday, 16 August 2015, webcasting from the last country in the world where Jew killing is praiseworthy. Precisely because Israel has stubbornly refused to insist that Judea and Samaria rightfully belong to the state of Israel, and the Goyim there will be respected as individuals but not allowed to vote in the Knesset, Dr. Federica Mogherini, speaking for the continent of Europe, says nothing when Jews are the targets of murderers. Only when a Jew kills an ancient Palestinian impostor does she and the world chastise the Jews for being in illegal occupation of land that belongs to the Palestinian people, none of whom, by the way, are Jews. As my book shows, the invention of the Palestinians was the very theft of the concept of Palestine, as the exclusive property of Arabs, of Muslim Arabs, Christian Arabs, some would say Druze Arabs, with Jews excluded. Since the 1970s, the very word Palestine has become the exclusive property of the Palestinians, none of whom are Jews. When a generation earlier, only the Jews were called Palestinians. How about that? What has happened since then has been a kind of shift in the tectonic plates of evolving history. For 2,000 years, the Jews were looked upon as wanderers, evil wanderers, condemned to wander, for they had been exiled from the land that God had given them for having killed God, as the common man would say. For 2,000 years, no other nation on the planet took the place of the Jews as the authentic owners and really the definers of Palestine. My book shows what Palestine looked like before the First World War, and it was the biblical map, but it had no connection to anything on the ground. Palestine had become a synonym for the biblical land, a promise to the Jews. The Jewish story defined the boundaries of Palestine. For 2,000 years, no other nation used that map, though, and no other nation ruled from the capital of Jerusalem. In every year, in those 2,000 years, Jerusalem was no more than a provincial pilgrimage town. For centuries, prior to the First World War, the Turks ruled. 4 centuries from Istanbul, and as my book shows, they had their own map, and it bore no resemblance to the biblical one of Palestine. They had no jurisdiction called Palestine. But since the 1970s, in a brilliant, evil maneuver, world anti-Jewry, in a way, has out-denied the Holocaust deniers. The Holocaust deniers deleted from history the activities of the German regime over the dozen years of its existence. But in the matter of the putatively Paleolithic Palestinians, enemies of the Jewish people have rewritten 2,000 years of history. No, they say the Holy Land was never a barren wasteland. It had been from time immemorial the cherished, beloved country of the Palestinians, living at home in their ancestral domain. No, the Zionist narrative, they say, is a complete fabrication. All those myths of chalutzim, pioneers, digging ditches and draining swamps, contracting malaria and dying, planting millions of trees, each sapling by hand, that never happened. Palestine has been a green and verdant land throughout its history, tended by the tender, loving hands of the ancient Palestinians. Before the Holocaust, these enemies of the Jews say there were no Jews in Palestine, no Zionists. After the war, a guilty Europe told the Jews, okay, go compensate yourselves for the Holocaust by just barging in and taking the land away from the Palestinians. Drive them from their homes, steal their orange groves, and that's what the Zionists did as agents of Western imperialism. This is why, on the holy day of the Sabbath, just yesterday, in Samaria, not one, but two homicidal Muslim maniacs stabbed 2 separate Jewish soldiers hours apart in different places in surprise knife attacks. But there will be no international outcry. The good news is that despite last Tuesday's directive from Yalon and Eisenkot, the defense minister and the chief of staff to the IDF and other agencies, to refrain from shooting dead those who throw Molotov cocktails at them, or like twice yesterday, a knife in hand attack them, as their forefathers had attacked other people for thousands of years, the directive was to cool it. On Tuesday, that was the depressing news item about new rules for the use of deadly force in Yosh. One who, for example, attacks with a knife, but then runs away, he's to be allowed to do that. Leastwise, as I understood the directive. Well, the good news then from yesterday was not only that our soldiers were not grievously wounded in those attacks, and one of them, soldiers' mates, did not lose a second in identifying the attack and unloading his weapon into the attacker and killing this wild ass of a 16-year-old. His name was Ahmed Kamil Rafiq Al-Taj. Bye-bye, Ahmed. The good news was the splendid military response on the scene and the blessing from the high command in light of the directive of just a few days before. One report had it that they went out because there was a feeling that too many Ishmaelites in recent days were being killed, and there's concern this could turn into an intifada. It's sort of like if you've ever seen the classic John Wayne Western Red River, in which a stampede occurs. The story has these cowboys driving 9,000 head of cattle 1,000 miles to market. No easy thing to do. And the last thing you want is for the herd at some point to panic and stampede. Not in the direction you're driving in. It's a frightening experience. Cowboys get killed or got killed in these episodes. So the GSS is nervous about a stampede of too many Ishmael clones getting killed. And that could light a fire we don't want to light. So extra restraint is to be applied. Well, yesterday, human nature took its course and was victorious. In that moment of threatening danger, the soldier deprived the would-be murderer of his life, thank God, regardless of the directive. What needs to be done, and never is revamping Israel's public diplomacy, as it's called. And instead of keeping alive the Oslo two-state solution, Israel should campaign for a five-state solution. My book shows clearly that the classical Palestine map is today divided among four states, three of them officially Arab and Muslim, and in sovereign control of 53% of the classical map. So Israel has to campaign for, yes, the creation of a Palestinian state on that 53%. It's not Jerusalem that must surrender territory to this allegedly ancient nation, but Beirut, Damascus, and Haman. Israel has thus the right and obligation to support the creation of a Palestinian state there, and do so wholeheartedly. That would take the place of the three occupying Arab regimes on that 53%. Those that three Arab countries are as much in occupation of classical Palestinian territory as Israel is, even more so. The gap is 6% between the two sides. Instead, we suffer the abuse of world anti-Jewry and knifing attacks for being basically seen as international criminals occupying land that does not belong to us, but to the Palestinians. Hence the BDS movement, which took an interesting turn yesterday, you may have seen. The American Jewish from Long Island reggae musician Matisyahu was ordered by the organizers of a music festival outside of Valencia, Spain, where he was to appear later this month, to make a statement of his support for a Palestinian state. And when he refused, they canceled his performance. The local BDS outfit claims that he supports an apartheid state, which practices ethnic cleansing, therefore he cannot perform there. Spent the better part of a summer in the early 1960s in Valencia. So I'm not too surprised. Spain, like Ireland, like Poland, has a heavy-duty history of heavy-duty Roman Catholicism and its inveterate Jew hatred. In all likelihood, the local BDS people are not at all religious, but fashionably hard-left, anti-religious. Nonetheless, their demand has the flavor and the passion of their Catholic forebears. How dare they interrogate this musician about views, which is what he's being asked to do here. This demand has the aroma of centuries of Inquisition, in which Jews were interrogated over their religious beliefs. This is the hallmark of a totalitarian mind at work. The late great Jean Kirkpatrick got her job as U.S. ambassador under Ronald Reagan by writing a splendid article on the differences between authoritarian and totalitarian dictatorships. The former was, of course, unfortunate for the people, but no menace to the United States versus totalitarian regimes like Nazism and Soviet communism, then still in force. And in this regard, these post-Spanish Catholics are no less totalitarian in their demand that all people hold the same political opinion when it comes to the only Jewish state in the world. A very negative opinion at that.
אברהם אבינו מחכה לאורחים, יושב בפתח האוהל, מביט למרחקים. מי כבר יבוא לאמצע המדבר? בחום הגדול לא רואים שום דבר. כחום היום, כחום היום, וואלה איזה חום, אף אחד לא יבוא היום. כחום היום, כחום היום, וואלה איזה חום, אף אחד לא יבוא היום. שלושה אנשים מתקרבים בצעדים רחבים, רץ לקראתם, מגיש להם מים קרים, מזמין אותם לאוהל, הם נכנסים. כחום היום, כחום היום, הם יושבים ומדברים. כחום היום, כחום היום, כחום היום, הם יושבים ומדברים. כחום היום,
speaking before of totalitarians who are not content to control your physical lives but must rule your heart and mind too. Last Thursday, here, the latest outrage among the enlightened, was an interview on Galitzal radio with the Jewish Home member of Knesset, Bezalel Smotrich, who said the media are controlled by gay people. Now, that item is from the Jerusalem Post on Friday. I did not hear the interview myself and would be curious to know what word in Hebrew he used. Anyway, he said they control the media and, quote, they are not healthy or normal. He said senior members of the media are homosexual and they hold the microphone and decide for all of us what we should think and what we should say. He spoke of political correctness that denies him the opportunity to fully express his views. He spoke of being cut off from time to time. I think it was his first public crack last week in which he drew attention to himself by calling the so-called gay pride parade the abomination parade, using the Hebrew word from the Bible, toeva. This, of course, outraged the enlightened. Even his own party leader, Naftali Bennett, chastised him. Bennett said there is no place for calling them that, and even if it is his own personal opinion. Smotrich, though, said, I did not make that word up. It is written in the Torah. And that's true. It could not be clearer. The Torah uses the dismissive word toeva to describe sodomy. Now, it's an interesting word which may be more stinging in English than Hebrew, abomination. The single word toeva, as my betters have taught me, could be analyzed into two parts, toeva, which in Hebrew means to make a mistake in something that you do. You will go astray if you do it this way is the intent. In Hebrew, then, toeva is like a warning sign on the highway about danger ahead. What is toeva is something you will go wrong in if you go that way. In any case, M.K. Smotrich is absolutely right. The Bible clearly and simply opposes this behavior. Bennett parried that in the Bible it says Sabbath violators should die. Are we going to go and kill people who violate the Sabbath? I'm afraid Bennett's thinking is faulty here. He's comparing taking action with moral revulsion. To call gay sex an abomination is not prescriptive. It calls for no action. There's no punishment here. And surely Bennett knows how incredibly rare today Jewish court executes someone. They're always looking for loopholes. There's no comparison. Smotrich deserves credit for, I think, lancing the boil of this political correctness surrounding sodomy in our time. And it's about time. All over the Western world, gay Stalinists are demanding that everyone agree that there's nothing wrong with what they do. They have, from day one of their gay liberation movement, compared themselves to blacks as the objects of discrimination, when again, there is no comparison. To be born black is a fact of nature that has no more bearing on a human being's character than the color of another man's hair or eyes. Versus those addicted to perverse sexual behavior, which is just that, behavior. How, after all, do we judge a person if not via their behavior, not their God-ordained skin color or hair color? That was Martin Luther King's crowning achievement, I thought, as a preacher, when he said at the Lincoln Memorial in 1963 that he wanted his children to be judged by the content of their character and not the color of their skin. Wonderful alliteration, splendid oratory, and profoundly wise. That was the best of the civil rights movement, in a few words. Versus homosexual. As a word, it was invented in the late 19th century in Germany during the enthusiastic youth of modern psychology and psychiatry, and it was meant to avoid the judgmental word sodomite. Abnormal psychological behavior became a subject of scientific study in that period. But the contemporary gay liberation movement, for them, even that has become an unacceptable word. It's politically incorrect now. The term is gay. It has been, I think, one of this movement's greatest achievements, this displacement of the word homosexual by the original code word gay that men used to disguise their addiction. And in getting polite society to jettison the words homosexual and for sure sodomite, the essence of the behavior, therefore, is covered up. Indeed, the whole gay marriage scam, in a way, is a distraction, for as I understand it, the bulk of homosexual activity seems to be between strangers. Love has nothing to do with it. Indeed, speaking of love between people of the same sex is more camouflage for the behavior. Today's gay Stalinists are not interested in tolerance. In truth, they have always been tolerated. so long as their behavior was done in private, not in the public square. There has never been a police action against two consenting adults in private doing whatever they want to do. What the gay Stalinists demand is not tolerance, but approval. They want a blessing. And in the deal, anyone who does not approve is guilty of a mental disorder and is a bigot. And that's why I support Bezalel Smotrich, bringing the issue to a new level of public debate, I hope. It was Ralph Waldo Emerson in 19th Century America, the writer who said of his friend and neighbor Henry David Thoreau that he marches to the beat of a different drummer. This social isolate and my own Jewish identity has never been in search of becoming normal like Shimon Peres or marching with the politically correct. Rabbi Alan Schwartz of Congregational Health Tzedek in Manhattan once said to me that the reason the Jews have survived all these thousands of years is our fidelity to a rock-solid sexual code according to which sex is great, but within the bounds of holy matrimony, all the rest is out of bounds.
ואני יודע כי בא השמש מצל גופי המתארך על פני המרחב ואני יודע שאני מתגעגע רגלי אינן מגלות לי את כיוונן ואני יודע שירד פה גשם זוהי שתיקה של אדמה מחכה ועוד נצמיח כמו רקפת על הסלע אחת אינה דומה הרי לחברתה ואני יודע שיש רך ויש קשה כמו האדמה והסלעים על פני השדה יש בי אמונה אתה יודע מכל יש עבור נותרה מעט מנגינה לך לבדי בשדה אינך מגלה אינך מחסה לך לבדי בשדה אינך מגלה אינך מחסה הכל צפוי והכל נסתר מה אעשה מה אעשה ואני יודע בא השמש מצל גופי המתארך על פני המרחב ואני יודע שאני מתגעגע רגלי אינן מגלות לי את כיוונן ואני יודע אף שלא ראיתי שהיילה מסתתרת פה בין האורנים היא שומעת שבא הסתיו שהיא תרוץ עלי שלכת נשברים הולך לבדי בשדה אינך מגלה אינך מחסה הולך לבדי בשדה אינך מגלה אינך מחסה הכל צפוי והכל נסתר ומה אעשה ומה אעשה יש בי אמונה אתה יודע, בקולי השבור נותרה מעט מנגינה.
You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. And now, back to our usual focus, the war against Israel, conducted by the nations of the world. And in our time, they are being led by none other than the President of the United States of America, an enemy agent of the Muslim communist variety. It seems that even some liberal post-Jews who voted for him are now uncomfortable with his recent jabs at Israel for opposing his Iran deal. They experience the aroma of anti-Semitism in these remarks. On the online magazine Tablet, surprisingly, the editors struck back, very liberal. Obama's insinuation that the same people who got the U.S. into the war in Iraq are at it again, with the implication, made by none other than Pat Buchanan, the right-wing anti-Semite, that it was the liberal Israel lobby, which is simply not true. Indeed, his own Vice President Joe Biden and Secretary of State Kerry supported the war. The institutional Israel lobby said nothing. We should not be overly surprised or upset, though, by these words from Obama. This character, as I've suggested before, has no fidelity to truth, only what works in the moment. California Congressman Kevin McCarthy was in Israel the other day. He's the Republican House Majority Whip. And he was optimistic that not only would the Iran plan be defeated the first time, which is expected, but maybe even have the ability to override the veto, God willing. It will be a day of jubilation if that happens. Sort of like the Six-Day War or the rescue at Entebbe. Please, God, let it happen. Let the Muslim communist agent in the Oval Office, with his devilish plans for Israel, with this nuclear plan, be brought down. Not that I expect the American Jewish community to be of much help. Another one of their stars, the senator from Colorado, Al Franken, pledged allegiance to the anti-Jews Iran plot, like Barbara Boxer. He's one of those entertainers whose careers absolutely mystify yours truly. Franken became famous on Saturday Night Live, though whenever I saw him, I never laughed. This was a comedian? He was another de-Judaized comedian, I suppose, like Jon Stewart, who knows nothing of Israel, of Islam, the Middle East, of Jewishness. Tragically, Franken and Stewart do represent, though, millions of Americans of Jewish extraction in their ignorance and allegiance. I think I'll post on the DPP comments blog a letter of mine published on Friday in the Jerusalem Post weekend magazine. Should be self-explanatory. Look for it on the August 11 comments page. It expresses my distress at how the American Jewish community is shrinking at warp speed, though I did not express my fears for the future of American support in light of this rapidly shrinking American Jewish community. The country is becoming a different country, evidenced by the election, these last two elections, of this charlatan who obviously hates America. He said he was going to fundamentally change America, obviously because he fundamentally does not like America, starting, and I mean starting, with its support for Israel. That's how I interpreted his inaugural address, his first telephone call as president to the anti-Semitic Muslim assassin Mahmoud Abbas, his first appointment to George Mitchell to press the Jews to retreat from the high ground. And now, that is on Friday, JTA, the Jewish Telegraph Agency, reported that the reform movement in America and Hayas, H-I-A-S, the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, the Veteran Jewish Refugee Assistance Agency, founded in 1881 after the pogroms in Russia, which propelled ultimately 2 million Jews to come to the States and go to other countries even more. Well, the Forum and Hayas have called on the Israeli government to re-examine its asylum policy for these African invaders. That's my word. You all know, I imagine, how our insufferably enlightened High Court ordered the release of 1,200 of these men from their detention facility back into the streets of South Tel Aviv, the veteran slum streets of South Tel Aviv, to make life even more miserable for the poor Jews who live there. The chutzpah of Rabbi Rick Jacobs of the Reform Movement in Hayas to arrogantly sermonize that Israel is not being inclusive, as it should be, in dealing with these men. This I find is simply intolerable. The nerve of Rabbi Rick, who I'm sure lives in a nice house in suburban Maranek in Westchester County, to preach to Israel in the manner of these men with their record of misery-inducing behavior of harassing women, rapes, relieving themselves in the streets, and other unsavory activities. Apparently Rick is embarrassed that Israel is not as enlightened as it should be about taking in refugees. Well, I've got news for Rabbi Rick and Hayaz. The entire state of Israel is a refugee state. It's populated with mostly refugees and their offspring. Only a minority of Israelis arrived here from the free and democratic and prosperous West, from the States and Canada, England, Australia, France. 20 years ago, 1 million refugees from the carcass of the old Soviet Union showed up. In the 1950s and 60s, almost 1 million from the countries of Islam showed up. Before that, hundreds of thousands from early 20th century Europe showed up. Israel is an entire country meant to serve as an asylum for the Jewish people. These Africans, by international law, should be taken in by the Egypt that they crossed to invade Israel. Israel owes them nothing. Rabbi Rick should read my letter on the DPP blog of August 11th. Okay, and that's it for this first night of the week, with Israel suffering through an enormous heat wave, third one of the year. They say it's going to be a little better tomorrow. Until then, Tuesday, God willing, Laila Tov, Me'eretz Yisrael.